Housing for the Aged Action Group, HAG for short, a housing group for older people run by older people. Present
Raise the Roof!
We advocate for secure, affordable and appropriate housing. So listen up on the second and fourth Wednesday of the month at 5:30pm on 3CR 855 on your AM dial.
That's right, you're listening to Raise the Roof, the Housing for the Aged Action Group show here on 3CR, 8:55am. My name's Shane, I am alone in the studio today. Fiona and Liz, neither of them could be here. Half their luck, they're both on holidays this week. If you're a regular listener, you'll know what it means when I'm alone in the studio. It means there's no one to stop me, so we will be finishing the episode with a Taylor Swift song. In the meantime, we are going to hear from a panel discussion. Fiona was part of this panel. I don't think we have Fiona's part. I guess she thought you hear enough of her on the show otherwise, although it's funny that we did this on a week that she's not here to throw in her 2 cents. But it's from the Progress 2026 conference, and this was a panel called What Do People Really Think About the Housing Crisis? Sort of goes through some interesting research about people's ideas about housing. The first part that we're going to hear is an introduction from Ben Spies-Butcher and then some discussion from Alastair Sasson, both researchers from Macquarie University, and then we'll take it from there.
So good afternoon, everyone. My name is Ben Spies-Butcher. I'm from the Macquarie University Housing and Urban Research Centre, and I'm going to MC this discussion that we're going to have this afternoon. I'd like to begin by acknowledging that we're meeting on Wurundjeri land to pay respects, particularly given we're talking about housing and the securities around land and tenure and housing, very important to do that. So today we're going to discuss what people think about housing. So this session is focused on what punters think about housing, whether there's a crisis, what they think's causing it, what they think might solve it. And that's obviously become central to a lot of people's everyday life, to the cost of living crisis, and potentially also to the transformations of politics that have been happening with the rise of the far right. This session is organised around some data that was produced at the last election as part of the Accent Research Cooperative Election Study, which is a study that's run now for a couple of federal elections as an election study. It's also run by the group that does stuff you might know for Cosimaris and you see a little bit in the media. So we think it's a pretty good data source. This was a module that was specifically about housing that was run in conjunction with that. One of the advantages of drawing on data from an election is you get to talk to people about politics at the time they actually think about it, which for most people really is just immediately before they vote. And that's a really useful way of trying to engage with what's happening. Of course, politics has changed slightly in the last 11 months since the federal election. So we also are going to keep that in mind as we're talking through some of those results. I think you'll agree some of what we see might portend some of the changes that we have seen in politics over the last 12 months. My colleague, Alastair Sasson, is going to run us through some of the key findings of the data reasonably quickly so we get a bit of a sense of what people have actually said. And then we're going to move into a discussion, which is going to be led by folks at the centre of these debates around housing. So May Azizi, who's the national spokesperson for Everybody's Home and Deputy Director of Anglicare Australia, Leo Patterson-Ross, the CEO of the Tenants Union New South Wales and spokesperson for the National Organisation of Renters Organisations, and Fiona York, who's the Executive Officer of Housing for the Aged Action Group. So without any further ado, I'm going to ask Al to come up here and start running us through some data.
Thank you, Ben. This comes out of a report that was co-authored by Ben and I with our colleagues Sean Wilson, Adam Stebbing and Christian Rumming. Our module has a sample of just over 1,000 voters, and it's representative in terms of education, geography, in terms of who people voted at the last election, in terms of gender. One of the things that's not quite representative on is tenure, so we have slightly fewer renters than we would have in a representative sample. That's something to keep in mind as we go through some of the sort of headline results over the next few minutes. Well, one of the first questions we asked people was, do they agree that Australia is currently experiencing a housing crisis? And as you can see in this slide, there was a very high level of agreement with that statement. This might not be totally surprising, but this is actually relatively novel for these kinds of opinion poll surveys to have such strong support for a statement like this. If we break that down in terms of tenure, we see that it's renters who are most likely to express that sentiment, the most likely to say that, you know, the country and that they perhaps are experiencing a housing crisis. So media, you know, as I'm sure many of you will know, has often focused on owners with mortgages and interest rates, but it's really renters who report this strongest feeling. We asked people to what extent housing would influence who they voted for at the election. This was obviously an election in which cost of living was the key issue and housing a huge part of that. So no surprise that housing was a significant or somewhat influential for nearly a majority of voters, and it was an important influence for around two-fifths. Again, if we break that down in terms of tenure and in terms of age, we see it's particularly for young people and particularly for renters who are voting on housing. So around two-thirds of young people and renters were at least somewhat influenced by housing when they came to decide who they'd vote for. I think it's fair to say, and we'll explore this a little bit more later on, that housing is really an issue that's shaping the kind of politics and political identities of renters and young people. On the other hand, older people, generally people with more secure housing, but with some important exceptions, were less concerned about housing when deciding who they would vote for at the election. And that's similarly the case for outright owners, who certainly are less impacted by the housing crisis, not likely to vote based on housing policies. We asked people what they thought about Labor's election platform or their housing policy platform. Despite winning the election in a landslide, voters overall were pretty lukewarm, I think it's fair to say. You know, barely one in six said that they were satisfied with Labor's housing policy agenda. And there was quite a lot of, I guess, ambivalence or disengagement around the middle bar here, neither satisfied nor dissatisfied, or in the not sure category down the bottom of the slide. There was quite a lot of dissatisfaction as well, as you can see here. And as you might expect, most of that dissatisfaction was on the right. So coalition voters and far right, One Nation, Trumpet of Patriot voters. But even Labor voters themselves weren't particularly satisfied. If we were to break that down, there was well below a majority of Labor voters were satisfied with Labor's housing policy platform. People experienced the housing crisis really as a cost of living crisis. When we asked them to rank what they thought the top three housing issues were, the top three were costs, basically property prices, rents, and mortgage repayments. And when we break that down, you know, we see it's really about affordability, with people considering their own costs to be the most important housing costs. So renters cared most about rents, owners with mortgages cared most about mortgage repayments, outright owners, property prices, everyone really noting that high property prices were a big problem. But the key thing here is it's really about affordability. Perhaps slightly more confronting or surprising result a year ago than it is today, but you can see very clearly that immigration was seen as the biggest driver of the housing crisis in March 2025 when this survey was run. And we'll unpack this a little bit more over the next few slides, because it's not true across all of the groups that we're analysing. And it's not necessarily true for the people who are most impacted by the housing crisis. This is possibly also picking up some kind of broad opposition to immigration that isn't directly tied to housing. But, you know, for some people, immigration is the number one issue on its own terms. But it is nevertheless very significant. And coming in second, you can see high interest rates and new housing supply. So when you look at these results by age, you'll see that it's cost of living issues that are a bigger concern for young people. It's high interest rates and low wage growth that are more significant for young people compared to older people. Immigration is still listed as a significant issue, but less so compared to older age groups. For those older voters, it's really off the charts. We also asked our participants what housing policies they would support or oppose. And so this question is just asking for overall support and opposition and the extent of support or opposition. Later on, we have some questions about what they thought, asking people to prioritise what housing policies they thought were most important, but this is just, do you support or oppose? So you can see, again, high support for reducing immigration and quite high intensity of support, but also support for increasing first home buyer subsidies. Perhaps more surprisingly, quite a lot of support for limiting rent increases, for capping rent increases for private renters. And, you know, again, pretty significant support for it, more investment in social housing. When we ask people to prioritise which housing policies they think are most important, we see a similar kind of picture. So at the top, once again, reducing immigration, but we see more funding for public and community housing, or more funding for social housing coming out as a very high priority for the entire sample of voters. Coming in third, again, surprising to us, was limiting rent increases for private renters. So despite, I guess, the kind of mainstream press narrative being quite opposed to policies like rent control, they are popular and resonating with voters, it would seem. When we break this down by tenure, we see that limiting rent increases is comfortably the most popular housing policy among people who rent. Again, unsurprisingly. And a little bit further down in the column, you see also increasing rent assistance payments being popular for renters. So these are policies that directly speak to renters' material needs, that would directly help them pay for their housing or reduce their housing costs. And you can see that you know, at least ranks as high, if not higher, than reducing immigration. For outright owners, who again are less impacted by the housing crisis, pretty much insulated from the housing crisis over the last few years, reducing international immigration is once again comfortably the most popular policy. Simplifying planning rules and allowing higher density housing also, interestingly enough, resonates most with outright owners. And again, that's been a policy that both Commonwealth and state governments have been keen to kind of emphasise over the last few years. And it's quite notable, I think, that it's resonating more with owners rather than renters, who are kind of more likely to be at the pointy end of the housing crisis. When we look at this by age, once again, limiting rent increases and increasing rent assistance payments are more popular among young people, and immigration falls to fourth. Reducing immigration and simplifying planning processes, once again, more strongly supported among older voters. And so remember that young people and renters, as we covered in a few slides back, they're the ones who are more likely to vote based on housing. So these are the kinds of policies that they were looking for. At the same time, though, it's worth pointing out that public and social housing is actually more popular among older voters. When you look at things by politics, you really see a clear political divide on immigration, with right-wing voters very strongly supporting reduced international immigration, and also a divide when it comes to public or social housing, which is much more supported on the left of politics. In terms of limiting rent increases for private renters, you can see it's the top priority for Greens voters, but it's also the second top priority for populist right voters, so One Nation and Trumpeter Patriot voters. You know, and in comparison, rent control doesn't perform as well for Labor and Coalition voters. I guess what we might be seeing here is a bit of a kind of insider-outsider divide on housing, as well as a kind of left-right divide on housing in these data. The kind of base of both major parties is increasingly people who benefit from or are comfortable with kind of status quo housing policy. And in contrast, minor parties, both on the left and the right, are appealing to people who are perhaps locked out or disenchanted with the housing system or the Australian dream.
And on that upbeat note, we are going to hear a couple of community service announcements, and then we'll be back with some more from that panel.
If you're experiencing family violence, free legal support is available. You may need support with obtaining protection, setting up safe parenting arrangements, organising a new visa, getting into safe housing, or making sure bills and bank accounts are split fairly. Community legal centres have expertise in helping people who experience family violence and can provide confidential advice to help you understand your rights and legal options. Reach out today for guidance and support. Visit www.fclc.org.au and click Get Help to find a community legal centre near you. You don't have to face family violence alone. If you're currently in crisis, please contact Safe Steps on 1800 015 188. Federation of Community Legal Centres is a 3CR supporter.
This is Irene Bolger, former Secretary of the Nurses Federation in Victoria. Throughout the nurses dispute in 1986 and the waterfront dispute in 1998, 3CR was always there, broadcasting the voices of workers in struggle.
You're listening to 3CR Community Radio and we're broadcasting live from the Bay to Chicken Strike here in Melbourne.
We've just seen all of the thousands of nurses walk through to their meeting and people from different unions showing their solidarity.
3CR, radio for the workers, by the workers, since 1976.
All right, we're going to hear some more. Sorry, you're listening to 3CR, 8:55 a.m, Raise the Roof, the Housing for the Age Action Group show, and we are going to hear some more from the What Do People Really Think About the Housing Crisis panel at the Progress 2026 conference. In this section, we're going to hear from May Azizi and Leo Patterson Ross.
My name is May Azizi. I'm the Deputy National Director of Anglicare Australia, and I'm also the spokesperson for a housing campaign called Everybody's Home, which is a campaign that fights for more public and community housing and changes to the tax system to make housing fairer. There's a few things that stick out to me here, and I've been lucky enough to hear Ben and Alistair run through this data a few times now. I think there's a lot that's positive for people who are advocates to work with in the data. You can see that people expect governments to intervene in the housing market. I think that's the first thing that you can see. You know, enormous support across the board. Al did go into some of the segmentation and, you know, greater support among Greens voters for limits to rent increases, but it's hugely popular across the board. You know, I wouldn't overstate the differences there. And also really, really strong support for building public and community housing, or basically homes that people can actually afford to live in. You know, even on the populist right, one in three people backing that, and one of the stronger results from them besides immigration. So I think a lot to work with there. Another big reflection for me, and this is something I kind of struggle with when we work with some of our colleagues, you know, tax reform is on the agenda in a big way at the moment, but just a couple of years ago, our campaign would go into rooms and say, here are our priorities, you know, and one of them would be building more public and community housing, and the other would be getting the government to stop putting money in the pockets of investors to push up the cost of housing. And everybody would tell us that's off the table. You know, that's off the table. They're not going to do it. It's not possible. You know, and they've just had this, learned this lesson from the 2019 election. One of the things that we should take from this is that governments don't have mandates for particular things just because they've won. And I mean, I think you can see that people didn't vote for this government because they're in love with what they're doing on housing, you know, and they continue to expect a lot more from them. And so I think that's an important thing for us to keep in mind. I also think on tax, the kind of result that you get on tax really depends on how you ask people about it. When you tell people the government spends, depending on the year, between $15 and $20 billion on housing, should they be putting just about all of that money into various kinds of support for property tax investors? Nobody says yes, that's the best way to use that money, you know. Depends a little bit on the framing, and there are more persuasive ways to talk about it. The big thing that I really did want to get to on immigration, and something that I've been thinking about for a few months, and I acknowledge my Mark and Gemma from Common Cause are in the room and they've been working with us to do some thinking about this. Our sector, when it talks about the housing crisis, simply says the housing crisis is really bad or it's getting worse and that's why governments need to do X, Y and Z. They're not naming a villain in the story, and that is a huge problem for us if we're campaigning for change. And you can see that if from these results, if you don't name the villain, if you don't say this is a crisis that has been created by governments and it's benefiting developers and investors, they're the ones who are making money from this crisis, other people are telling a story that names a villain. You know, they're really telling the only story that names a villain. And so I think it's really important that we step up and kind of complete that story and complete that circle, because if we don't do it, other people are.
Leo, from your work working at the Tenants' Union, what do you see here?
I was reflecting on that. There was a book written 10 years ago about the UK renting experience, and there's a quote that stuck around with me for a long time, and it's that people base their satisfaction on what they believe is possible. And I think what these results are showing us is that what people believe is possible from government is changing. For a long time, housing prices, rents, were seen as something that happened and government wasn't really responsible for it. And that was very different to something like electricity prices, where we saw every single parliament around the country come back from their holidays to try and save people a few hundred dollars. But they weren't lifting a finger to stop house prices or rents going up much more quickly. Because they thought that the voters thought it wasn't something that was possible to change, and so they weren't going to be dissatisfied if you didn't change it. I think these results are starting to show that that's no longer holding, to May's point, that people are expecting government to act, and so they are expecting to see policies that reflect their experience and reflect the actual powers that governments have to act with. There was a couple of reflections in there that popped out. When we look at the satisfaction with Labor's performance in particular, and that really big group in the middle of people who were neither satisfied nor dissatisfied, or at the bottom that were not sure, that was 50% of the respondents. And I think that what that shows is there's a lot of room, again, it's really reiterating May's point, there's a lot of room for different stories to tell about what should be expected, what is going wrong, but they can go for us as well. It doesn't have to all go to an anti-immigration story, a reactive far-right story. It can go towards a more productive vision of a better housing system, one that works for people. The other was that much higher frustration from renters and feeling the housing crisis, I think was the word. And that's, I think, because renters are hit twice in this. There is a range of renters. There's a growing diversity of people who rent their homes, people renting for longer, people renting more likely to be renting even into retirement, but certainly with families, with children. And then there was, you know, let's say 30, 40 years ago, although it was never the case that every family was owning their home or that everyone in retirement was owning their home. But if you're a renter now and if you're a younger renter now, you might still have aspiration to ownership, even if it's through inheritance. You might still think that that's a pathway that's open to you, or you might think that you're a lifelong renter. Either way, you don't think the government's sorting this problem out for you. And so you've got two reasons to think you're upset. Whereas if in the other groups, you might think, well, this is the main thing I'm concerned about. But what's growing is the concern for your family, for your friends, for the other people in your community who you also feel are being left behind.
No, thanks very much, Leo. And Fiona, from your perspective, we've heard a lot about young people in that story, but that they're not the only folks affected by the housing crisis. So what's the story you're seeing from this?
Yeah, thank you. I feel very honoured to be on this panel with these people. It's great. So my organisation works with older people who are mainly in private rental or experiencing homelessness. One of the things that we do is we partner with research institutes and we pair that with people with a lived experience, and we take those things to decision makers to try to make change. We run the Home at Last service in Victoria, and every day we're receiving calls from people who are absolutely struggling in this housing crisis, and it has a wide-ranging effect on all sorts of things according to their health and well-being, including their ability to receive aged care in the home. And so one of the pieces of research that we released a couple of years ago was looking at the demographic data between 2011 and 2021, between the 10 years between the last two censuses, and it shows that the housing picture is really shifting for older people. There are fewer people owning their own homes. About 42% of older people own their own homes. There's been a 73% increase in private renters, and there's been a big increase in the number of older women experiencing homelessness. And the reason that that's a big issue for older people, and we get these calls every day, we had a gentleman call the other day who's in his 90s, who had a heart attack when he received a rent increase, never competed in the private rental market before, absolutely no idea about apps or how to apply online, still had a paper bank book that he took, couldn't get 100 points of ID, absolutely no chance of getting any other private rental, and very little other options available to him. We have people that are living in rooming houses and caravan parks unable to get aged care assessors to come in to have them receive that home, home modifications, all sorts of things. So it's actually having a really huge effect across the whole spectrum of health and wellbeing, with people having to make choices between paying the rent and paying for their medication. And it's really increasing social isolation. So people can't go out for a cup of coffee, they can't buy things for their grandkids, and they're not able to participate as volunteers, which we know unpaid labour is huge in this economy as well. So I guess what we're seeing, that picture is not the boomer versus millennial rhetoric that we hear. We're seeing a lot of boomers who have missed out and who are really struggling, and we're seeing millennials who are inheriting housing from their parents. So it's not a particularly instructive or useful dichotomy to be spruiking in the media or spruiking in our campaigning, and it actually creates more division and doesn't create a shared kind of, you know, a shared villain. What are we going to do here about this when lots of working class people and people who have been artists and musicians and activists who have been lifelong private rentals, people that we know are now in their 60s, 70s and 80s, really, really in, you know, dire straits. So I guess what the data shows to me was a couple of things. One is that there's stronger support for public housing amongst older people. And I think that's because a lot of them grew up around public housing. We had a higher percentage of public housing as part of our housing mix when they were growing up. It wasn't as stigmatised, it wasn't as ghettoised, and it wasn't a dirty word. We're actually allowed to say the words public housing, like public schools and public parks and public hospitals and public housing. So it's not a strange thing for older people. We've got someone on our committee of management who's in her mid-80s, she grew up in public housing, and it's normal. So I think that's something that we can grasp and run with and educate, I guess, younger people listening to older people talking about destigmatising public housing. And I guess the other thing I noted in the data was the number of older people who are in the conservative right. And I think that speaks to the messaging that the right is giving around inclusion and around a sense of belonging and the feeling of having missed out. And I guess, how do we... We're a member-based organisation. We have over 1,000 members. And this is an internal struggle that we have all the time. Our values are inclusion, equity, social justice. Yet we have members who seemingly don't agree with those things because they're attracted by things like Rally for Australia and the migration argument. So what do we do about that? And it's uncomfortable. We don't necessarily want to be speaking to racist old white men, right? But sometimes, you know, what welcome do they get if they do come through the door? And is the OK Boomer thing going to push them away into those spaces, or is it going to bring them in? And so I think it's about how we communicate that and how we unpack some of the data and the stories and the rhetoric and to be listening and unpacking things a little bit more deeply.
Wonderful. And with that, I think we are running out of time. So I'm just going to say maybe a 10-second pitch of a thing that we should take away as housing campaigners. If there's one thing to take away, what would you say it is from each of you before we close the session?
Next time you hear boomer versus millennial, take it with a pinch of salt. And also public housing. You can say the words public. It's okay.
I think our role is always to be pushing what is possible to lift people's expectations, lift people's belief in what is demanded so that we can move forward.
Ask for what you want. You know, it drives me crazy when we go into spaces like this and people have had meetings with government, government has told them what it's going to do, and so they only campaign for the thing that government is already going to do, and then they congratulate government for doing the thing that it was always going to do. Ask for the thing that you want.
Wonderful.
Well, we are plumb out of time. If you want to give us a call at HAG, talk about a housing issue, the best number to call us on is 1300 765 178. That's 1300 765 178. I won't even give out the other contact info because we really are almost out of time to hear any Taylor Swift in this episode. So I promised it to you. I won't let you down. This is Love Story by Taylor Swift. We'll be back second and fourth Wednesday of every month. See ya.